Mira, crying in agony for its mate. I ran in the other direction, doubling back to the pond, but he was too close. I wasn't going to make it to the water before he reached me. I braced myself for impact, which never came. The second creature tore directly past me and landed in the water with a splash. He whined in distress and tried to nudge his unconscious mate awake, but the frigid water overwhelmed him and sent him thrashing. I could go right now, back to the oak. Against every single odd, my plan had worked, and I could get to the burrow route before the eclipse. I looked up at the moon. I still had time, maybe a few minutes. One last haunting wail ripped from the surface creature, still trying miserably to stay afloat and save his mate. He let out a strangled cry that reverberated through the trees, then gurgled as the water pulled him under. Bleeding stones. I could not believe I was going to do this. I dove back into the water. Agony clawed at my skin once more. This dive was 1,000 times worse now that I knew how cold it would be. I swam toward the first chimera, who was still unconscious. Thankfully, the water buoyed the creature, allowing me to move her to shore. I pushed her massive body toward the edge of the pond and rolled her onto the grass. The second was going to be harder. I swam toward the sputtering chimera and tried to get under his huge front paws, but took a flailing claw to the face instead, a flash of burning pain ripping across my cheekbone. I braced myself and dove underneath the icy depths. Silence enveloped me. Pushing him forward, I tried to maneuver the beast to shallower water. I pushed and grunted, feet scraping along the pond's algae-covered bottom, until the creature finally clawed himself out of the pond and choked out water and half-digested deer. The stench was nauseating, but there was no time to retch. The first chimera wasn't breathing. I reached her quickly and began chest compressions. As soon as my hands touched her fur, though, I knew. No, no, no. It was too late. Swallowing a sob, I placed my hands over the fur of the creature's chest and hummed. Dawkins' words had been clear. Focus on how I felt, not what I thought, or what I feared. I felt remorse, deep, painful, and specific, like a needle piercing my gut. Remorse that I had almost killed 2 innocent creatures out of terror. Through my palms, golden light blazed, and I pushed the cold water through the chimera's lungs like a maze. Encouraged, I moved my hands up along its esophagus. The light that emanated from my hands grew brighter over the chimera's throat as I worked. Pushing and plying, I drove the water out with careful focus. The second creature had stalked over. He menaced toward me with a roar that shook the trees above us. But I didn't have time to feel afraid. "She's going to live," I said, my teeth chattering around the words. I knew he couldn't understand me. "I can save her if you don't maul me." I pushed power from my fingertips into her torso as the water lodged in her lungs worked its way out. The other chimera considered me, then looked down. Slowly he lay next to his mate, tucking his snout between her back and the forest floor, whining softly. After one final push, a spray of putrid wet flew at the chimera's mouth, and I ducked. She rolled over and choked on air, and I exhaled my own in turn. The relief was like a solid weight in my palms, tangible and grounding. Thank the bleeding stones. The chimera I had saved sluggishly climbed onto all fours and shook out her wet fur. Her mate nuzzled and licked at her before turning back toward the woods. I took that as my cue to leave and gave one last glance at the 2 creatures, but they were already retreating in the other direction. The larger chimera looked back to me once, and his melancholy white eyes held mine for a single moment. But I was most definitely out of time. The eclipse was high in the sky, painting the entire forest an unnerving blue. My limbs were heavy with the exertion of my power, but I raced for the clearing and turned right at the glistening silver of Dagon's sword. I pushed aside the deer carcass and saw each burrow root leaf below me had blossomed into a stunning lotus underneath my fingertips. I plucked as many as I could, jamming them into my pack. Within an instant, the eclipse was over and the blossoms were gone. The twisted wood was cloaked once again in pale, shadowy moonlight. I could have cried with relief. I had done it. I was freezing and was likely going to need 6 or 7 warm tubs to thaw out. I was soaking wet, covered in dirt, dripping blood from my face, and had sprained the shit out of my wrist. I was still nauseous and achy from last night's terrible wine-related choices, but I was alive, and I had the burrow root. The thought of giving my mother some kind of hope for the first time in years overwhelmed me. A sob racked through me, and I bent over, bracing my hands on my knees. It was time to head back. I reached for Dagon's sword, stood up, and saw it. A more horrific creature than I thought possible. Yellow, slitted eyes. A rabid, snarling mouth lined with pointed teeth. A wet, slick snout. And worse yet, the broad stature and build of a violent, possessed man. I went rigid, my skin prickling and my insides turning cold. Despite my trembling hands and heart, I turned and ran back toward the castle as fast as my legs could carry me. The wolf beast chased after me on all fours, all knees and elbows and odd angles, an uncanny sight I'd likely never erase from my mind. I knew it was faster than me. I choked on a sob as tears sprang to my eyes. I ran and ran and ran, terror pulsing in my joints, my legs, my lungs. This could not be how I died. I took a hard right in hopes of losing the wolf beast, but his snarls followed me around the bend and on through the maze of oaks and pines. I cut another right, but he gained on me with ease. Stumbling and slipping on the twisted branches below, I whipped back and swore I saw primal pleasure in his eyes, a predator that enjoyed the hunt. I was never going to outrun him. There was only one way I was making it out of these woods with my life. I stopped in my tracks, slung out Dagon's blade, and leveled it at the beast. My lungs burned. The creature skidded to a halt, and I swung, missing his neck by a mile and slashing his bicep instead. The creature whined at the incision, then roared at me. I didn't have the breath to weep or sob or beg. "You insipid child." His voice was like a razor against metal, inhuman and repulsive. A scream ripped out of me at the shock that he could speak, and I paced backward, still holding my sword out. Every time I thought I understood the depths of the dangers of this world, something new and even more horrific than the last came for me. The beast lunged, and this time he slammed me to the ground, knocking the breath out of me and grinding my spine into the rocks below. A sob split from my throat, furious and wild and dripping with agony. But I shoved him away with every single ounce of strength I had and scrambled back up before he could sink his claws into my body. I lifted the sword once more. Dagon would not have been pleased with my form. Between my exhaustion and my sprained wrist, I was holding it less like a sword and more like a bat. The wolf beast's face twisted, and I understood then the term wolfish grin with complete clarity. He was amused. "Didn't expect the wolf to speak." I tried to respond, but couldn't find my voice as he closed in on me. I wanted to scream, but only a whimper slipped out. My trembling palms were sweating against the leather pommel of the sword. "You're tougher than they said you'd be, but nothing I can't handle. I can already taste you from here." The wolf licked at the air with his long canine tongue. I shivered at the thought of its rough texture sliding over my bones. The wolf beast lunged at me again, and this time made contact, his claws ripping out a chunk of my hair. I yelped in pain, which only seemed to excite the monster. He dove for me again, knocking my body into the mossy ground below. Pain bloomed in my shoulder and elbow, my wrist already pulsing in agony. The wolf's breath washed over me and smelled of something more powerful than magic, metallic and astringent. I realized, with utter clarity, I was not going to survive this. As if the beast had heard my thoughts, he reared back with a violent howl and lunged forward to dig his razor teeth into my abdomen. I screwed my eyes shut. I just hoped it would be swift. Please, 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 please. But the pain never came. Instead, I heard the deafening wail of a creature howling in agony. I could hardly understand the sight before me. Gray and golden fur rolled in a heap on the forest floor, a tumbling mess of snarling, blood, and whimpers. The chimera. He had lunged at the wolf beast, effectively saving my life. And now, he was ensnared in the monster's claws. Like a dogfight, they were moving so quickly I couldn't intercept. I waited for the right moment and lunged forward, driving my blade into gray fur and knocking the wolf into a tree. The chimera fell to the ground, one goat-like horn severed, and a piercing wound spurting blood from his neck. "No!" A cry caught in my throat. The wolf beast cackled, exposing rows of pointed teeth, and stood before me. I looked down at the wheezing animal at my feet, who had given his life for mine. For the chimera, I was going to pretend to be someone brave until I was one. I angled my hips toward the beast, swung the sword to shoulder level, and brought it down on the wolf. He dodged, then charged me, but my body took over. Weeks of training, of sweat and blisters and aching arms and sheer determination, all came together in an instant, like a key sliding into a lock. I swung repeatedly, nipping him on the shoulder, the neck, the arm. His howls became my fuel, and each time my blade found its mark, I was emboldened, stronger. The sword felt lighter in my hands. More than that, it was an extension of me, of my rage. I moved like Dagon, step after careful step, circling the creature. When he charged me, I brought my sword down on him and sliced one of his claws clean off. He howled, and I felt it in my bones. I was not capable of stopping. The clearing glowed. I could see him better in the soft yellow light that surrounded us. Sweat poured down my brow, but a breeze I couldn't place warmed and cooled me at once. I felt taller, fiercer, more whole. I could have sworn I saw fear enter the wolf beast's eyes. He lunged at me once more, and with everything I had left, I stabbed forward, burying my sword to the hilt in his chest. He gurgled out a screech that felt ancient in its power, and with a dying breath, reached his remaining clawed hand out toward me. If he made contact, I didn't know. I turned and ran for the chimera, bloodied sword still dangling from my hands. The golden creature was whimpering, bleeding out onto the damp leaves of the forest. "No, no, no," I pleaded. "You're all right." It was the larger chimera. He had come back to help me. A kindness shown for saving his mate's life when I had been the one to cause her near death in the first place. I could not let him die for me. Tears rolled down my cheeks and landed in his fur. His eyes were dimming. There wasn't enough time. I pushed my hand into the chimera's neck wound and closed my eyes, focusing on his pain. But I was so tired, so weak. I had used my powers up on his mate, and then some. Nothing came out, or even pricked at my fingers. "Please, please, please." I wasn't sure who or what I was praying to. I thought of that day with Dagon. the way I had pulled warmth and light from the atmosphere. I pictured taking what little moonlight still shone, sucking it into my fingertips, and redirecting it through me and into the softly crying creature. Something beneath me shone bright like a sunrise. Emboldened, I strained against the weakness and focused further on the ether, the sky itself. I could harness it, make it work for me. The glowing intensified. I could almost hear the chimera's lungs filling up with air once again. But the forest was starting to feel very hot, which made no sense. It was summertime, but the shadow woods had been icy all night. My hands were shaking, and the ground felt uneven. Was the earth moving? No, the trees were moving. The chimera was now up and looking at me curiously. His neck. It was better. Healed. How? Physical relief surged through my bones. I tried to get a better look, but the creature's coarse, honeyed fur was blurring into the moonlit night. A wave of nausea rolled through me. Something sticky was dripping down my body. The chimera tried to nudge me with his furry snout, but I tipped backward and landed on the dirt with a thud. Something was very wrong. A voice thundered my name a million miles away. The chimera took off into the woods at the sound echoing off the trees. I tried to tell him goodbye. A man's blurry figure, with a familiar cedar and leather scent, rushed to me, hands pressing into my chest like a heavy weight. "No, not goodbye," the figure assured me, but the voice was panicked. "You are going to be fine." Slowly, pained quicksilver eyes and a clenched jaw came into focus. It was Kane. He loosened the sword from my rigid fingers, uncurling each one carefully until the metal hit the dirt with a resonant clang. I looked up at him, bewildered. Where had he come from? Behind the king were at least 7 men on horseback, all with swords drawn. Kane's eyes were wide, his jaw locked tight. He wrapped his arms around my chest tightly, holding me from behind. "Stay with me, Arwen. Can you hear me?" When I laughed, something wet and phlegmy rattled in my chest, which made me hack up a cough. I wiped at my mouth. "So dramatic, my king." The bright red smear of my hand turned my words into a single choke. I peered downward. My chest was sputtering blood between Kane's fingers. I lifted his hand ever so slightly and could see my own collarbone beneath my ripped and frayed flesh. Everything blurred, and I felt darkness overtake me, sudden and unyielding. 22. Relentless, excruciating pain coursed through my body, shocking me into consciousness. I sucked in a lungful of air and swallowed hard. Salt dripped into my eyelashes. My mouth tasted like coins. I could barely make out the shapes moving like a dust storm around me. Women with damp cloths and a man wrapping my wrist in gauze. Someone was stitching up my face. The needle tugging at my skin was a dull ache compared to the searing in my chest and roaring behind my eyes. Some cobwebbed, rational corner of my mind wondered who was healing me if I was the castle healer. I laughed out loud, and the focused men and women exchanged furtive looks and only seemed spurred to work more quickly. I tried to press my palm into my chest, but the woman next to me kept pushing my hand out of the way. It didn't matter. I had no power left. I had used all my healing abilities on the chimera. When had that been? I could barely keep my eyes from fluttering closed and fought to peer through the sheer drapery that surrounded me. It was a room I had never been in, shrouded in navy curtains and filled with leather furniture. A handful of black candles with curled wicks burned in the dim light. Something smelled familiar, like home, but I couldn't place it. Lilies and stone vases peppered the space. Where had those come from? The delicate white flowers played against the soft candlelight. Beautiful. Also sweltering. About 1,000,000 degrees and suffocating me. I tried to sit up. I needed fresh air right now. Warm, broad hands held me down. "Try to stay still," Kane murmured, his voice hard as steel. "It's almost over." I whimpered and turned my face away from him, my head foggy and nausea coating my stomach. I was dizzy and hot and freezing. I need water.
"I'll get it for you."
His familiar scent disappeared, and my throat closed up at the loss. He was back moments later and gently pressed the glass to my dry, cracked lips. A sharp burst of pain echoed through my chest, and I choked on the agony.
"You're torturing her!"
Kane roared at someone, but I could not see anything through the blinding anguish. I heard the glass of water shatter on the floor.
"The venom has to be purged, my king. This is all that we can do."
"Please," he begged. Actually begged. "Then please, just work faster." "We are trying, but..." A woman's voice. The fear in her words was contagious and soaked into my already shivering bones.
"No,"
he breathed. It was almost a sob.
"There might not be..."
The truest, most piercing agony I had ever felt seared through my chest, into my heart, down to my toes, through my very soul. I screamed a bloody, gargled wail into the overheated room. Sweat dripped from my brows and stung my eyes. I couldn't endure it. I couldn't.
"No!"
he roared, and this time, wisps of twisted black shadow filled the tented gossamer of the bed, snuffing out all the light and bathing the room in stark black midnight. The specters drowned out my suffering in an instant. What was anguish, pure anguish, was now nothing. Numb, cold nothing. I reached for Kane, in relief, confusion, but found only the swift and heavy comfort of sleep as my eyes fell closed instead. A sharp stab of pain exploded through my back. I snapped my eyes open and was somewhere unfamiliar. Or worse, somewhere all too familiar, a place I hadn't been in years. I was staring at the dark wood floor of Powell's workshed. It wasn't even worth looking to the door or windows. I knew they were locked, that I was trapped inside. I braced myself for another lash of pain, but it didn't come. I peered up and instantly regretted it. Powell stood over me, face bright red and snarling, belt raised.
"Weak girl,"
he said, spitting. Tears spilled over my cheeks and snot bubbled at my nose.
"I have asked you 3 times this week not to play in the kitchen," he said, voice booming off the walls of the cold, empty shed.
I didn't want to cower, but I couldn't help it. I shrank into myself, hoping my back might soon stop pulsing in pain. I knew better than to speak.
"You're infuriating, making me teach you this way."
He was right. He only ever hurt me because I was the worst. Why couldn't I be stronger, smarter? I hated that everything he said about me was true.
"You are a poison in this family, Arwen. You're killing your mother."
As he lifted his hand to strike me again, I called out, begging him to stop, but nobody heard me.
"Shh, Arwen, nobody is hurting you. You're going to be all right."
I sobbed and sobbed, cries racking through me at the pain. "Please stop," I thought. "I can't take anymore."
"Stop what? Arwen."
He sounded frantic, scared. But so was I. The bed was like a bath of silk, soaking me in sheets and leaving me weightless. Layers of gossamer lined the four posts, and twinkling lights peeked through in pockets. I hadn't noticed a fireplace before, but the fickle, dancing flames through the canopy were a comfort. A slow lullaby sounded from an instrument somewhere. Haunted and bewitching, the notes weaved through the room like wisps of moonlight. It made me want to sing, or maybe cry.
"You're awake,"
Kane said from a corner of the room I couldn't see. My eyes ached with tears at the soft sound of his voice. The melancholy song ceased, and I heard him place something on the floor. What had I seen before falling unconscious? The images of black, mist-like smoke coiling around me, lulling me into sleep, were hazy, but I knew I had seen them. The feeling, it hadn't been like anything I had felt before. Not like magic, not like a potion. It was as if something had seeped inside my soul and eased my anguish. It was a dark and twisted mercy of some kind. Kane approached me slowly and held his cool palm on my forehead. It felt delicious. I leaned into it like an animal, rubbing my hot face on his hand.
"I have something even better for you."
I whimpered at the loss of contact. The bed shifted and Kane was beside me, pulling my body against his and laying a cold compress on my forehead. It felt like heaven, and I turned my face away so he could run it along my neck and shoulders and arms. My eyes shot open. "What am I wearing?" I could hear the slurring of my words. Kane blushed. "He is so cute."
"Thank you, Bird. You're in one of my shirts. It was all I had."
I nodded my face into his body, cradling my aching wrist against his chest. "You're warm," I said.
"Not as warm as you. Your fever hasn't subsided."
I hummed. "Arwen," he continued, "why were you in the woods tonight?" He paused. His poor eyes were anguished.
"I could have lost you."
He held my wrist to him like it was very delicate. My heart thumped. "I tried to find you." I peered up and was met with a pained expression. I reached my good hand toward his rumpled brows and touched his temple. "It's all right. I got what I needed."
"And what was that?"
"For my mother. To heal her." Kane nodded, but I could tell he had no idea what I was saying. "Sleep, little bird. I'll be right here." So I did. I woke to shuddering and gasping. I looked around for the source, only to realize the grotesque noises were coming from me. It was midday, and I felt like a hog roasting over a spit. I lashed at the sheets and rolled around, searching for some relief from the mountains of covers that swallowed me whole. I rolled onto a hard body and knew from the familiar scent it was Kane. He smelled like a sweaty cedar tree, if it had been doused in whiskey and set on fire.
"Clearly I need to bathe," he said, his voice laced with sleep.
I had to stop doing that. My fever was making it impossible to tell my thoughts from my words. I was a delirious mess. Everything was blurring together, and I thought I might have been babbling. "Damn this fever." Kane's answering laugh shook the mattress beneath us. Ugh, had I said that out loud, too? "Why are you in my bed?" I asked. I was aiming for snarky, but it came out like a lost child.
"Actually, you are in my bed." I held my ground.
"Why am I in your bed?" Kane laughed again, a bright and hearty boom that brought a lopsided grin to my groggy face.
"It's so good to have you back, even just a little."
I wasn't sure where I had gone, but I smiled anyway. "You're welcome."
"Can you eat?"
He made to leave the bed in search of food, but I wrapped my arms and legs around him like a vine. "Don't leave." I was pathetic. It was all right. I had made peace with it in death.
"You aren't dead, Arwen."
"Of course I was.
He was reading my mind, and I was pantsless.
I'm not reading your mind, you're talking to me. And you're pantsless because you keep taking off your pants.
He motioned toward the floor, and I peered over to see my leathers in a heap. I whispered an internal prayer of thanks to the stones that there were no undergarments down there as well. I curled toward him again.
I can't keep holding you like this, he said.
His body had tensed. I couldn't tell if I had dreamt it.
But I can't seem to let you go, either.
What was that? I asked.
I didn't know how to explain it. The twisted darkness that had filled his room like living shadows. But he knew. I want to share everything, Arwen, but it would only bring you more suffering.
I pried one eye open to look at him, but he was staring out the window at the sun as it slipped behind the woods below us. I'm stronger than you think.
No, Bird. You're stronger than any of us. It is only you who doesn't think so.
The clumsy giants were back, but this time they had brought friends who also lacked rhythm. I rubbed at my temples and tried to swallow, my mouth feeling like cotton. But my vision and thoughts were clear. The fever had finally passed. I sat up and stretched. Every joint in my body, from my fingers to my neck, popped and cracked with relief. And I was starving. I slipped out of the bed, my bare feet on the cool wood floor, and assessed the room that smelled so brightly of lilies. So these were Kane's private quarters. They were more colorful than I had expected. Whimsical blue throws and sultry violet curtains popped against the dark wood floors, stone walls, and cluttered shelves. Stacks of the historical books he had told me about framed his bedside. It was so lived in, so masculine. Not at all cold or sterile, as I had once imagined. The balcony doors were open, and I stepped outside, soaking in the fresh air and summer sunshine like a wilted flower after a storm. I stretched my arms high above my head, and the breeze grazed over my thighs and bottom. Oh, right, no pants. I went back inside for them, but my leathers were so stiff and caked in dirt, blood, and pond water, I couldn't bear to slide them on. Behind the four-poster bed was a closet, filled with mostly black, kingly attire. In the far corner was a full-length mirror. I prepared myself for the worst and approached. In some ways, it wasn't as bad as I expected. My legs were mostly fine, minus a few scrapes and bruises. I was grateful to be in undergarments that covered my ass and most of my stomach. Kane's large black tunic fit me more like a dress, and I heaved a sigh of relief. 1 point scored for modesty. In other ways, it was really very bad. My face looked horrific, like a deranged swamp witch. My eyes lacked their usual olive color. I was too pale, and my lips were cracked. The stitches on my cheek cut across me like tracks, and my lower lip was still bruised from the night of the explosion. Even my wrist, despite the wrappings, was purple and swollen. I held my palm to my cheek and breathed deeply, feeling the welcome sting of my skin lacing itself together again and pushing the stitches out of my face. I was still so weak, but I had enough left to make a slight dent in the healing process. Within a couple of days, it would barely be noticeable. But that wasn't the worst of it. It was time to see the real damage. The buttons of Kane's tunic were easy to undo, but I was terrified to look at my reflection. I wasn't necessarily a vain person, but I knew whatever injury I had sustained from the wolf beast would be with me for life. Peeling back the bandages revealed a large gash that ripped me from my collarbone to the top of my breast. The healers had stitched it up beautifully. I would have to thank them somehow. For the first time, I'd had someone actually tend to me after I had been injured. It was a strange comfort to not have been alone healing my wounds.
But in looking at the stitches, an image of the white of my own collarbone flashed in my mind, and I gripped the ornate armoire to steady myself. I wasn't squeamish. My professional assessment was that the dizzy spell was more likely due to dehydration. I made my way back into the bedroom and found Kane setting a breakfast tray on the bed for me.
"You're up,"
he said, eyes following my bare legs. A grin tugged at my lips. His shameless ogling felt like a sign that I was no longer his patient. I self-consciously patted my wild hair.
"I am," I said. "What's this?"
I climbed into bed and tucked a rebellious lock behind my ear. Fine, I wanted to look nice for him. Maybe hours of fevered, sweaty, bloodied Arwen could be erased by a decent comb.
"This is breakfast. How's the wound?"
"It's uncomfortable," I admitted, "but better than I expected given the fever. I don't want to know what kind of venom was in the beast's claws. Thank you, Kane, for everything." He only nodded. The food before me was mouth-watering. 3 boiled eggs, 2 loaves of clover bread with a dollop of honeyed butter, a sliced apple, and some grilled pork. I practically drooled. And, candidly, it wasn't the only mouth-watering part of breakfast. Kane looked downright delectable. His shirt was unbuttoned, exposing a slight dusting of dark, curled chest hair. His black locks were swept away from his face, and slight stubble sprinkled his chin. I hadn't ever seen him with facial hair before. I resisted the all-consuming urge to cup his jaw in my hand.
"You have a beard," I said around a mouthful of apple. He cocked his head and joined me on the bed, resting his hand on my forehead. I laughed and covered my mouth.
"Not the fever talking, just a lack of filter."
A horrific thought dawned on me as I wondered what humiliating things I must have said while sick. As if he could read my mind, Kane's lips curved in a mischievous smile. I raised an eyebrow in question.
"Oh, you don't even want to know,"
he purred. "Stop that. You're lying." I was going for outrage, but his charm had turned my admonishment into flirting. Damn him.
"You'll never know."
"Add it to the list," I mumbled, and took a huge bite of the sweet bread. When he didn't respond, I turned to face him, but he was lost in thought.
"I don't mean to keep things from you, Arwen."
I didn't like when he used my name. Not that I fully understood the feathered nickname, but I had come to learn that Arwen meant only bad news.
"There is some knowledge that would only bring you more pain."
His words brought back a singular memory of the strange power that had seeped out from him when I was dying and brought me into a sleep-like state. Stronger than any medicine, but not quite unconsciousness. My breathing went shallow. I scrambled back on the bed away from him.
"So you remember that," he said, his face solemn, resigned.
"What was that? Are you some kind of warlock?" But I knew that had not been magic. He frowned.
"Perhaps if I had told you weeks ago, you wouldn't have nearly died."
I wanted to ask how the two things were at all related.
"Finish eating," he said after a moment. "Then let's take a walk."
23. Shadowhold's gardens were a welcome sight for my weakened eyes. Trellises of the expected gardenia and lilac surrounded pitch-black fountains with floating blossoms. Velvety purple roses bloomed alongside twisted black voodoo lilies, and ethereal violet and wisteria hung overhead. Flowers I now knew were called batflower, dragonarum, and spider orchid flourished in abundance. It was a gothic display of beauty, but one I had come to love. I wondered if part of me always knew there was more to this place than horror. Kane strolled alongside me, but I kept my distance.
I knew he wouldn't hurt me. He had just saved my life. But I was uneasy, to say the least. Confused, afraid. I felt like I was on the precipice of something that I wasn't sure I wanted to know. But it was too late for that now. The Arwen who would rather stay in the dark, naively waiting for everyone to take care of her, make decisions for her. The thought of that version of myself brought me to the brink of nausea. We moved slowly, taking in the stillness and chirping birds. After bathing quickly and putting on a clean dress, I had met him out in the early evening air, and he had yet to say a word. "I need answers, Kane," I said, not unkindly. But it was true. Enough was enough.
"I know," he said, resolve fading from his eyes. "I just need to think."
Fine. I could be patient. We strolled through the garden in silence until we passed the same gloomy flowers, which reminded me of something. "The white lilies in your room." It wasn't really a question, but he answered me anyway.
"I thought they might remind you of home."
My heart swelled. "They did. Thank you." He hesitated.
"Happy memories, I hope?"
I turned his question around in my head. "Mostly." When he didn't respond, I looked up. He was watching me with a strange intensity. "What is it?"
"While you slept, you were calling out for someone to stop. I thought you might have been dreaming of the beast that attacked you, but then you kept saying this man's name."
I could tell he was trying with all of his internal strength to be gentle, but his eyes were all pupil.
"I never stopped thinking of those scars I saw on your back in your washroom."
"Arwen, did someone hurt you?" Something about the kindness in his voice made me feel sick. I didn't want to be saved anymore, pitied. "No. I mean, yes, a long time ago when I was young. I'm fine now." I watched him watching me.
"Obviously," I added dumbly. Kane looked like he could topple mountains. "Who?" He gritted the word out.
I hadn't told anyone this in a long time. Only Ryder, actually. Once I was old enough that the memories felt like someone else's life, I had made him promise to never tell Lee or our mother. A truth for a truth, maybe. I steeled myself. "My stepfather, Powell, would beat me. I don't really know why. I think he hated me because I wasn't his. It's not a very good reason, but sometimes people are just looking to give their pain to someone else and will use any excuse they can find. My family never knew."
"How?"
he asked. "My mother was always sick. I knew she couldn't live without him. I couldn't put that on her. Lee was too young to burden. Ryder and Powell were so close. I could heal my broken bones and welts pretty quickly."
"And where is that pathetic creature now? With your family?"
I shook my head. "He died years ago. A stroke."
"Shame."
Kane's eyes simmered. I gave him a questioning look.
"Bastard got off far too easily," he said, looking down, jaw tight.
When I didn't respond, he added,
"I'm sorry you had to suffer alone. I'm sorry you had to suffer at all."
Again, with that pained gentleness. "Thank you," I said, and I meant it. "But now it's your turn. No more stalling." I steeled myself. "What did I see?" He crossed his arms over his chest, a gesture I'd never seen him do, and then uncrossed them just as quickly. He ran a hand through his raven hair. I reined in the urge to physically choke the answers out of him.
"In my defense," he finally said, "you had been drinking."
I waited for that to make any sense.
"It didn't feel like the right time to tell you in the wine cellar." And
Kane sighed.
"I didn't want to scare you."
His words had the opposite effect as fear coiled in my gut. But I kept my gaze neutral.
You remember the rebellion led against the Fae King, he said, and I nodded. It was orchestrated by a small group that wished to save the realm, to bring down the impenetrable walls and free those within them. The attempt, it was led by Lazarus's son.
The Fae King's son tried to overthrow his own father?
Both of his sons did, actually. But yes, the rebellion was led by his youngest.
A tiny, spindly talon of dread scraped gently down my spine. And how does that relate to what I saw? Cain clenched his jaw, a flicker of shame in his eyes.
It was me. I'm Lazarus's son, Arwen.
But I couldn't hear him over the roaring in my ears.
Arwen,
Cain said, studying me. Cain was Fae? The beings I had feared as a child, the stories intended to scare and shock told over a bonfire, the thing I had been sure, so sure, did not exist at all until 2 nights ago, was now standing right in front of me. The words fell out of my mouth. You fought against your own father? Cain's eyes watched mine fiercely, searching for something.
I tried to, but failed.
His expression was unreadable. I twined my shaking hands in my loose skirt.
It was the worst mistake of my life. It cost me, and those closest to me, everything they cared about. It cost most of them their lives.
His bitterness, his rage, seeped out like ink in water.
He had said he hurt those he loved, but this
was...
I hate Lazarus more than you can fathom. I will avenge those we lost and save this mortal continent, Arwen. I have to. It is not a question of if, only when.
I dipped my head in a nod. I believed him. How could I not? I had never seen anyone more steadfast about anything. But I was also still absolutely reeling. Do your men know what you are? Does your kingdom? He took a shuddering breath as if to calm himself before shaking his head. So what I saw when I was... I swallowed the word dying. That was light?
Yes. Each Fae has a different variation of it, so it won't always look like that. There is something dark laced within mine. Something I inherited from my mother's witch ancestry. I try to use the power as little as I can manage.
Cain's face barely concealed his disgust. But you used it last night, on me, I said.
To silence your pain, your suffering.
Yes.
He looked at me, eyes clear. And I'd do it again, 100 times over.
Thank you, I whispered. He only nodded. I rubbed at my temples and stared ahead at the sprawling hedges before us. A slight summer wind blew my skirts around my ankles. It was just dawning on me that Cain was probably over 100 years old. The onslaught of information of the last few days, mixed with my fragile physical state, was teetering me toward a mental breakdown.
You're taking all of this surprisingly well, he offered.
I turned to him, inspecting his youthful face, smooth skin, strong jaw. How old are you?
He covered a smile with his hand, rubbing his stubble. About 215. My mouth fell open. To be honest, I've lost track over the years.
I shook my head, trying to rattle my thoughts around. When was the rebellion? How long have you been ruling the Onyx Kingdom?
I left the Fae Realm with a few I could get out 50 years ago. I took over Onyx from the king at the time, an older monarch with no living heir. Part of the persona, as you had called it, the mystery, the foreboding, I've crafted with my closest advisors for that very reason.
So nobody will know how you look or notice when you don't age.
Correct, he said.
What about your allies, King Eryx and Princess Amelia?
They know, both of my lineage and Lazarus's intent. They plan to fight against him, for Evendel.
The reminder of the impending doom of the entire continent
was like ice water running through my veins. There was truly nowhere to run, no way to save everyone. No matter what happened, who won, so many were fated to die. He grimaced as if following my train of thought.
There's not much time left. The mercenaries from the Fey realm are coming for me while Lazarus prepares for war.
Kane swallowed once.
That's who attacked you in the forest.
I froze mid-step. The wolf was a Fey mercenary? The thought that I had killed a Fey felt like a sick joke. That's not possible.
Very powerful fairies have the ability to shapeshift into a creature form. It's incredibly rare and uses a huge amount of light. I'd imagine Lazarus is devastated to have lost one of such power. He can't have more than 100 left in his army.
I wondered if it was pride that glowed in Kane's eyes. That's what killed your man in the Shadow Woods, when you brought me with you?
Yes. Also what took a bite out of me, as you said that day in the infirmary.
He smiled at the memory.
My father's mercenaries have been coming for me for months now.
All the mysterious injuries that nobody would explain to me. Lance's bite, Barney's wound that first night.
We've killed as many as we can to keep them from reporting my whereabouts, but we can only hold them at bay for so long.
The thought of them coming after Kane forced the color from my face.
It gets worse, I'm afraid.
I braced myself. How did I know that was coming? The Kingdom of Amber has taken Garnet. The entire garden stilled along with my heart. My family, they were there. My family sailed for Garnet. At least, that's where they plan to go. You have to take me there, to find them. Kane's expression softened.
My spies are close. As soon as I find your family, I'll get you to them. But I fear Lazarus may be confident enough to attack now. He has 2 mortal armies.
Kane took hold of my upper arms. I didn't flinch at his touch, and his eyes seemed to notice, growing warm. His broad hands radiated that heat throughout my body.
You can't stay here a day longer, Arwen. The keep is no longer safe for you, or anyone. He is coming for me. Any day now, I'm sure of it.
I swallowed hard. Lazarus couldn't have Kane. All other thoughts had slipped from my mind but that. He could not have him.
But as you know, Peridot and Onyx have struck an alliance. You need to leave tonight for the Peridot capital of Siren's Cove, where you'll be safe. Griffin will take you.
Griffin? My stomach sank. What about you?
I will join you when I can.
Then he let go of me. And I missed his touch, like warmth in the dead of winter. Where are you going?
That's enough honesty for today, I think.
He tried for a smile, but it didn't reach his eyes. But you've told me everything now? No more secrets? I can't live like this anymore, Kane. Especially now. I need to know this is everything. He pressed a soft kiss to my forehead.
Cedarwood and crisp mint
flooded my senses.
Yes.
A weight I hadn't anticipated rose off my chest. He had told me weeks ago that he didn't indulge in trusting others, and that he couldn't trust me. Yet slowly, torturously slowly, he'd let me in. Knowing he had changed his mind, for me alone, allowed me to share these burdens with him, cracked me open completely. I sighed so deeply, my lungs hurt. As we rounded the same hedge as before, I noticed a handful of soldiers had lined up to meet us. Griffin stood chief among them, his face stoic.
Now?
The familiar rise of panic turned my stomach. I was terrified to leave him. The enormity of my feelings for Kane drenched me like a torrent. I nearly fell to the ground. All this time, I had thought I wasn't capable of such feelings at all. I thought Powell had so thoroughly ruined me that I would never feel anything close to this. And yet, Kane's brows knit together in pain at my pleading.
Yes, now.
Wait! I had to get my racing heart under control.
Please, can Mari come with me? I couldn't leave her here if the castle was likely to fall.
I'll have Griffin send for her.
He watched me closely, brows pulling together, something warring in his expression. I didn't care anymore how pathetic I sounded, how weak, how afraid, how ridiculous it was to have fallen for a lethal, breathtaking Fey King. Will I see you again? I said. I felt like I might cry. Kane looked like he could hear my heart splitting open. I hope so, bird. I reached up to touch the dark scruff that had grown across his jaw and neck, the slight bags under his eyes. I realized, belatedly, that he was a wreck. Carefully, as if I were a wild animal, he brushed a hand against my cheek. I was vaguely aware of the handful of soldiers who suddenly found their shoes exceedingly interesting. I must tell you one last thing. His eyes didn't leave my face.
I was wrong that day to say you thought you were worth less than your brother. You made a heroic choice the night you came here. It took tremendous courage. I have been king a long time, and rarely, if ever, do I see that from even my greatest warriors.
My eyes found his through a cloud of tears.
You showed extraordinary bravery when you had no hope it would save you. Whether you know it or not, Arwen, there is a wild strength inside of you. You don't need Ryder, or Doggin, or me, or anyone else to take care of you. Remember that. You are enough.
His words were a prayer, devastating and empowering at once. We were mere inches apart, and I could feel the tickle of his breath across my lips, his fingers weaving through my still damp hair. Kane studied me closely, brows pulling together, and tentatively wrapped his other hand around my waist. His eyes searched mine once more, as if to make sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that I wanted this too. I hoped he could see that I had never wanted anything more in my life. He let out a shaky breath and, with unexpected tenderness, brought his mouth to mine. As my lips brushed his, he released a guttural sigh into my mouth, as if he had been holding his breath for days, years maybe, waiting for this very moment. I could relate, feeling his mouth envelop mine, being held inside his arms, knowing he somehow felt the same. It was better than anything I could have dreamed. His lips were soft and wet and searching. He took his time with me, savoring and gently caressing my lips with his, sending shivers into every nerve ending in my body. When his grip tightened in my hair just enough to pull me closer, I lit up and moaned into him. My fingers slid delicately, softly, achingly against his neck, and a groan fell out of his mouth into mine. I caught his bottom lip between my teeth and sucked. I wanted another one of those low, rumbling male noises. I wanted it more than air in my lungs. As if he could feel my need, he deepened the kiss, his restraint slipping from gentle into something hungrier, something far more desperate. He brought his hand from my waist to the side of my face, angling my jaw closer and sweeping my mouth with his tongue until I couldn't help a gasp, and I swore I felt a wicked chuckle rumble through his chest against mine. And then it was over. He pulled back, lips bruised and parted, chest heaving, and looked at me only once with enough longing to weaken my already shaking knees. I felt the absence of him like a chair being pulled out from under me. I swayed with the loss of contact and watched as he walked away all too quickly. 24. I was being cooked alive. The Onyx summer was relentless, and the warmth was intensified inside our stuffy carriage. Mari and I had been assured by Griffin and the four other soldiers with us that Peridot was only a week's ride away, but by day two, it already felt longer. When I asked Griffin why we weren't traveling by dragon again, he had said the dragon was
more of a symbol for Onyx power than a mode of transport, in that signature dry way of his. Still, the dragon would have been less hot. I watched Onyx's landscape pass by through the carriage window while Mari slept. I was shocked to find myself missing Shadowhold. Maybe it was the constant smell of lilac in the air, or the Gothic library and its wrought iron chandeliers, gardenia against stone, velvet chairs, and Kane's grin. I missed my work in the apothecary and all the faces I'd likely never see again. Doggin's furrowed brow. I couldn't stop thinking about how I had fought a fey creature and won with everything he had taught me. I wondered if I'd ever get to tell him of my battle. He would be so proud. I hadn't even gotten to say goodbye. The moments after Kane left had been a blur. Griffin sent soldiers with me as I threw the few belongings I had in a sack, whirling around my room like a tornado. The burrow root was still safely lodged in my satchel, and I gathered the remaining ingredients for the concoction from the apothecary before we were rushed out of the keep for good. On our first night in the carriage, I confessed everything to Mari, who played a masterful game of catch-up. We covered the impending doom of the continent, Fey history lesson, horrific wolf-induced wound, Kane's immortality and overall not-humanness, and the deeply inappropriate corners of my mind that, despite all of the above, wanted to strip him bare and lick him from head to toe. Mari wasn't her usual sunshine self, of course. Upon hearing the news of the war's advancement, Fey-related details were kept under wraps. Her father rode for a small town outside of the capital to gather his sister and her six children. Mari didn't know if he'd meet her in Peridot, and she was trying to keep the thought from her mind entirely. Mostly, though, I missed Kane. It had been only 2 days, and I knew I wasn't missing him as much as preparing to miss him. It seemed very unlikely he would come hide out in Peridot with me anytime soon, with this war.